I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Tennis Podcast. You find Catherine Whittaker and myself, David Law, just a couple of weeks after the US Open has finished. Catherine, we were supposed to come along just before the finals. We never managed to get around to that, but we're here now. And we're together in person. And why are we together? Because I've just finished my first ever commentary on football at BT Sport. So we're down here in the Westfield Centre near BT Sport, where I'll be doing a tennis shift in the morning at some ungodly hour, 2:30 in the morning, when Heather Watson plays her first match of the event against Sara Errani. And I've got to work out whether to go to sleep before match of the day two starts, and I get to watch West Bromwich Albion beating Tottenham Hotspur. So I'm pretty happy with life at the moment. Catherine, how are you doing?
Spoiler alert for the football results. You're supposed to say, if you don't want to know the results, look away now. But anyway, I'm very well, thanks. We are adding to the list of bizarre and glorious places where we've recorded this podcast at the Holiday Inn in Westfield. So yeah, it's good to be here.
Can I tell you that it's a little bit different commentating on football to commentating on tennis? For a start, you've got at least 22 people to try and work out who they are and why you're talking about them. Where in the tennis, you've got only two. It's brilliant.
Yeah, you appreciate tennis all the more. I was going to accuse you of being a turncoat for commentating on the football, but it sounds like it's making you appreciate the joys of tennis all the more.
Very well said. Well, the US Open has come and gone, and goodness me, it didn't half produce some surprising results at the end, didn't it? If we talk about the men first of all, we obviously had our finalists all worked out well in advance, and we had all the amusement at you predicting Bernard Tomic to go all the way to the semi-finals. But actually, the people who got there to the final weren't that much more absurd and surprising than old Bernard, and you're looking a bit smug.
Well, prepare. I mean, you and I, as well as being broadcasters, also PR and comms professionals, so prepare for some serious spin here. But I think my rather out there Bernard Tomic prediction, I think what that was a thinly veiled general prediction that, you know, it's going to be a surprising event and there might be some surprising finalists. Which,
talk about vague, honestly. I mean, you know, that's up there with taking your breath away for Roger Federer, that is, which he unquestionably has done over the past 12 months or so. But obviously, I get loads of credit for Caroline Wozniacki reaching the final because I said she would do that. Wrong year, I know, but still, get loads of credit for that. But we'll get on to that in a moment. But in the end, Marin Cilic and Kei Nishikori were fantastic, weren't they? That semi-final day was one of the most surprising days of tennis in decades, I would suggest. For Nishikori to beat Djokovic toe-to-toe and then Cilic to wipe the floor with Federer.
Particularly to have those two back-to-back, as you say. I watched the Nishikori match and I was completely blown away, flabbergasted so often after an upset like that in a stadium. The next, I'm surprised that Marin Cilic was able to deal with that moment of there having been the huge upset and coming out. It obviously worked in the most positive possible way for Marin Cilic, of thinking, oh, well, none of this is by any means a foregone conclusion. Kei Nishikori's just beaten the world number one to make it to his first Grand Slam final. I'm gonna do the same and beat the greatest of all time to reach my first Grand Slam final. And I was very disappointed in Federer that day.
Hold on a minute. He was a bit exhausted, wasn't he, after the Gael Monfils epic?
He was a bit exhausted, but...
He's about 50 years old.
Yeah. But there haven't been many occasions in Grand Slam so far where Federer has shown his age. I think this is one of the first significant moments where sort of his age and lack of ability to recover as well as he used to has actually shown. And you can't blame him for that. He can't stop the turning of time. He is older than he was. But just to see that playing a part in the way that it did, and to see him look half a step slow... was a shame. I think it's difficult to see. It's only half a step. He's world number two. It's not like it's a dramatic fall from grace, but it's still difficult to see that, I think.
Could he have done anything different in the course of that match? I mean, he was playing a man inspired, wasn't he? But I did hear one or two people say, you know, where is the Ed Berg serving and volleying and taking time away, all that kind of thing? I mean, from where I was stood, I don't think it would have made a whole lot of difference. Marin Cilic just obliterated him.
I agree with you. Tactically, I don't think there's much he could have done. I read the same commentary about why didn't he serve and volley more, but there weren't those opportunities. He had the match completely taken away from him. What I do think he could have done differently and better is that he's the experienced guy. Marin Cilic, I felt, and I think Federer should have been feeling, Marin Cilic is going to have a wobble at some point. I need to... His body language looked defeated to me. And I think if he could have kept up some positive body language, got pumped up, got the crowd pumped up, Marin Cilic at some stage would have had a wobble, would have had a moment where he thought, even if it was, you know, but in the third set when Federer is already two sets to love down, as Gael Monfils did in the previous round.
Yeah, but he's not Gael Monfils, is he, Marin Cilic? I would explain to you this. When Cilic came out to serve for the match, that was the time when he would have normally, or any human being under normal circumstances, would wobble. Roger Federer came out dancing around, looking to get in his face, looking to try to take away the play from him. Three aces in a row from Marin Cilic snuffed out any hope.
But that was about as last ditch as it gets. I mean, throughout that the second and third sets, so I thought Federer looked completely defeated to me. And yeah, Marin Cilic might well have not wobbled, but I don't think Federer gave him maximum opportunity to do so. And I think that possibly could have been the only thing he could have done better. But look, frankly, Cilic looked unbeatable, didn't he, that day? He looked completely unbeatable, just as he did in the final.
And three straight sets matches in a row. I mean, where has this come from? We know Goran Ivanišević pretty well on the Champions Tour, and you were telling us in the last podcast, or in fact the preview podcast for the US Open, about how you'd been with Goran in Belgium when he was at the ATP Champions Tour event, and his... You'd heard about his frustrations with Marin Cilic. Even though they'd made major strides, he couldn't seem to get that final element there. But Goran has tapped into something that I don't even think Marin Cilic knew was there, but it obviously was.
I think you've summed it up really well. I don't think Marin Cilic knew it was there, but Goran did. Goran, as much as I think he has been frustrated and he has despaired on occasion because he's known that it's there, and I think... His frustration perhaps has come from trying to convince his charge that you've got it in you to win Grand Slams. And there's also been frustrations, I think, of Goran has been desperately wanting him to use his weapons to their maximum, which to Goran is plain and simply to come in off his serve as not serve and volley second serve every time. You know, it's not 1992, but certainly to spot the opportunities to do so and not be afraid to do so, because it's criminal with a serve like that. You know, it's the same advice that Andy Roddick finally started taking on board sort of latterly in his career, And so I think there's the element of sort of tactically his game clicking and him realising how best to use his game, and also just believing. It sounds so trite, doesn't it? But he somehow, Goran, made him believe.
He also, and I think this is absolutely key, he made him relax. Marin Cilic is a very nice guy, but he's a very analytical fellow. He was also coached by one of the great brains of tennis in Bob Brett, but somebody who I think was able to build and provide the building blocks to the game of Marin Cilic and then get him to use them tactically and so forth. I think he taught him how to be a relatively complete tennis player, but I think Marin Cilic ended up confusing himself almost and suffocating his own game by analysing his opponents too much. And Goran just wanted him to go out and just take people apart and not even think too much about their game, just impose his own game. And that's what he did with these people.
Yeah, and his style of play, when it's working, isn't a style of play that requires a lot of thought, is it? He's not an Andy Murray who's all about court craft and constructing a point, you know, perhaps a bit more than he ought to be. You know, if you're serving three aces per game, there's not much to think about there, is there? And that's what he was doing in those final few matches. And he came out of his own head. He was just swinging and it was going in. It's as simple as that.
Where now for Marin Cilic? Do you think this is the start of more? I mean, you know, why wouldn't he win again? I mean, he's got the weapons. I mean, maybe he could be a player of contending for Grand Slam titles for the next few years.
On the evidence of the US Open final and the semi-final, absolutely, it would be a letdown for him not to. But as we've seen so many times, and probably the most recent example is Stan Wawrinka, being comfortable with being a champion is quite some challenge, and this is now the challenge that Cilic and Goran big time have on their hands. You know, it's one thing sort of seeing it down on paper, seeing your name inscribed on the trophy, but I mean, I can only imagine, I'm not a champion at anything, but feeling like a champion, feeling like you have champion's blood running through your veins, I think is a different thing. And that's the challenge now. But tennis wise, I watched that final and I thought, right, he should win a lot of these.
She does do herself down, Catherine Whittaker, because I've seen in the round-robin matches between herself and her three housemates, she's always won them. None of them can play tennis at all, but she always wins. Kei Nishikori was a revelation, a breath of fresh air as well, wasn't he? Because not only did he get a nation, in fact, a whole continent interested in the latter stages of the US Open. I mean, I think he did it in a manner which I don't think most people thought he was capable of. In the same way as Cilic surprised people, Nishikori surprised people, including himself. And Michael Chang, I think, was equally as responsible for that as Goran Ivanišević was for what Cilic did. Because I remember one of the first big matches I ever saw at the US Open was Michael Chang losing to Stefan Edberg in well over 5 hours in the semi-finals in 1992. And suddenly Nishikori, this man who had 14 retirements on his record over the course of his career, was suddenly outlasting people in fifth sets. He outlasted Stanislas Wawrinka 2 days after outlasting Milos Raonic at 2:24 in the morning or whatever it was. You know, it was mind-boggling what he managed to do. And then he went and beat Mr. Iron Man Djokovic.
I remember at the start of, I think it was Nishikori's match against Wawrinka, which will live long in the memory. It was even in the first set. I think it was sort of 4-all first set, you know, very even. But I saw a tweet from one of our colleagues, very good tennis writer Ben Rothenberg, and he said, it said something along the lines of, the question here is not, can Nishikori win? It's, can Nishikori last out this match? Because that's sometimes what it looks like with him, and that sometimes is, you know, as you said, given his track record, it's hard not to feel that way. And not only did he last it, he won it, and he kept on winning it. It was obviously a bridge too far, but he's uncovered some steel in him, hasn't he? And it's the supercoach thing once again. It's obviously we don't know how much to attribute to the coaches, and you don't want to take anything away from the players themselves that are achieving it. But I don't see it as any coincidence that the four semi-finalists all had so-called super coaches, Grand Slam champions, coaching them. And certainly the fact that the two finalists this year, they've taken on those coaches, and this year it has been breakthrough beyond anything close to what they've achieved before.
Well, you don't see any coincidence, and neither does Ivan Lendl. This is what he thinks about it.
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence. I really don't. I always felt that one of the biggest attributes of Tony Roach coaching me for 10 years, what he was giving me was the knowledge and the knowledge what it feels like to be on that center court on Sunday afternoon. He has done all four of them. He has been in all four finals. So I think the experience is, I don't care how good of a coach you are, it's very difficult. Very difficult to have without having done it yourself. I can think of two coaches in the history of the game who have not played on that level and have been able to learn that experience through having so many opportunities and finals over there. One of them Harry Hopman and the other one Bob Brett. And I may be missing someone, and I apologize if I am, but I think that experience is really important, because then I just read an article saying my coach understands me, and talking about those guys. I don't know if it was on Eurosport or something, and it makes perfect sense. It really does, because it's so different walking there on Sunday or Monday, in this case, for the finals and even the semifinals, than if you have someone you can talk to about your feelings and so on.
And all four of them and yourself had quite a long time when you weren't, none of you were really involved in the sport anymore. Yourself probably the longest of all of them. Are you all back, do you think, because there is a buzz by being involved again and being competitive in your own way on the sidelines there and in preparation?
Yeah, I don't know. There are so many things to coaching which I don't enjoy. It's not necessarily the work, but the travel, the airports, being on the road for so long. And as we said earlier, I don't like doing anything half measures. So in order to do it properly, it takes a lot of time, and that's the hardest part.
But when the player that you are helping actually gets the success that they are seeking, what is it like? What does it feel like for you?
Just like anything else, when you set to do something or try to do something, you do it the best way you can, and if that leads to success, in this case it's the player's success, it's a lot of satisfaction.
That's Ivan Lendl speaking to me on BBC Radio 5 Live during the US Open, and I was really amazed by the candor in which he assessed the impact of the coaches, of the super coaches, you might want to call, which is a trail that he has blazed with Andy Murray. And you know, he was very clear about the difference that people who've been there and done it can make to a tennis player's career.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. I found it absolutely fascinating. I mean, he's now been linked with Thomas Berdych. Wouldn't be surprised. And, you know, Thomas Berdych would be a perfect project, in inverted commas, for a guy like Ivan Lendl. Just as with Andy Murray, getting him over the finish line. Maybe he could do the same for Thomas Berdych.
By the looks of things, Thomas Berdych is the classic candidate for a super coach. He's obviously got it all. He's been to a Grand Slam final. Similar game to Cilic, perhaps more built for the back of the court than Cilic, but nonetheless sort of a very simple, looks like a simple equation for him, but there is just something missing, and it's something that's preventing him from being a Grand Slam champion, and it seems to be something that these super coaches are able to give to whoever they're coaching. So I think I'm surprised Berdych hasn't courted the possibility of Ivan Lendl before now. I mean, as soon as it was announced that he had split with Murray, I'd be surprised if Berdych wasn't on the phone to him the next day. It seems like an absolute no-brainer. And as you say, for Lendl, if he is looking for a project, I can't see anyone better. It's just whether they can come to an agreement of number of weeks per year, because I know that's an issue for Lendl, isn't it?
Yeah, he's always wanted to reduce the amount he travels, but, you know, you wouldn't mind a bet that he could just come along the week before a Grand Slam, just add the finishing touches and maybe teach Thomas Berdych how to win one of the big ones.
Sprinkle some champions dust on him, that's what they seem to do.
They sure do. Well, talking of champions, Ivan Lendl will be part of the ATP Champions Tour field in Italy, which is a two-night event in different cities in Italy in October. Do have a look at the ATP Champions Tour website to find out where that is going to be and when. It will feature John McEnroe, Ivan Lendl, Michael Chang and Goran Ivanisevic. So if you find yourself in Italy in October, you want to go and watch that. It'll be good fun, that. And also, while we're on the subject, another addition to the Stato Masters tennis team at the tournament at the Royal Albert Hall in December 3rd to the 7th is Andy Roddick. Catherine Whittaker, we announced this week. Andy Roddick coming to play at the Royal Albert Hall. It'd be good to see him back, won't it?
I think he's going to love it, isn't he? He loves London. He loves the tradition of centre court. He's always been quite in awe of it, and he speaks very eloquently about those sorts of venues and what they mean to him, and there's always been such a fond relationship between him and the British public. I think a real rapport. I think he's just going to love it, just going to fit right in, and the public are going to love it. I think it's going to be a really special thing to see him on the Royal Albert Hall court.
Can I cross promote this podcast to Andy Roddick's podcast, the Fox Sports Live podcast that he does with a broadcaster called Bill Reiter? Can I do that?
You can do it, but obviously in hopes that Andy Roddick will return the favour.
You don't give to try and receive, Catherine. Didn't you ever get taught that?
No, but it'd be nice to receive, wouldn't it, nonetheless?
It would, yeah. But anyway, I'm not doing it for any personal reason other than I find that podcast absolutely hilarious. I probably understand about 10% of the content in terms of the American sporting references, but it makes me laugh.
It makes me laugh as well. It's a great podcast. If you're listening, Andy, then we like to think this one is too.
Yeah, a lot less swearing on this one. So this is for the under 15s as well. Now, the women's draw at the US Open ended up with a great final story on paper, but in terms of an actual match, it wasn't up to much, and that's because Serena Williams was absolutely devastating.
Yeah, too good. And when Serena's on, her game does not match up particularly well with Caroline Wozniacki's. And to me, as much as I respect what Caroline Wozniacki did at the US Open, she didn't look like she thought she had any chance in that final to me. I think she looked quite defeated from the word go. And perhaps that was just realism on her part, because it was evident from quite early on that Serena was on. And as we said, it that's not a good equation for her. Serena playing her best, hitting the lines. And so it turned out. But fantastic run to the final.
No, there was that moment where you saw Serena about the fourth round or the quarterfinal stage just hit that top Serena Williams gear. And it did feel as though, well, everybody else may as well go home. There's nothing anybody can do about it right now, because she's hitting form that we probably haven't seen since last year right now.
Especially as you saw all the players that could potentially challenge her in the draw fall away. I mean, they were just dropping like flies, weren't they? When I saw Kvitova go out, I thought, I mean, we discussed her as a serious contender before the tournament. And one who could probably genuinely challenge Serena, but there she went in the second round. Everyone else seemed to fall away. Azarenka played her best all year, but just didn't have the match practice. And now we've just seen that she's announced that she's out for the rest of the year, which is a real shame for her. This is a terrible timing in her career to be suffering with injury like this.
But in a way, I think she probably is better off just going and sorting whatever it is out, because she's had a rough time this year. She just needs to get it sorted. I mean, it's not as severe as Laura Robson's was, but I think when players are struggling like that, they're better off just starting again with a clean slate next year.
True. It's probably a wise decision. It's still a long way back, though. I mean, look at Andy Murray. He decided to do the same. He took the brave, drastic decision to get his back sorted once and for all. And he's not back to where he was, is he, for whatever reasons? Obviously, it's not all because of that injury time out there.
He looks all right, though, at the US Open. And you think in that match against Djokovic, he pushed him, he won a set, it was close.
He looked great, but he's still not won a tournament since he took time out for back surgery. Same with Del Potro. He got his wrist sorted out once and for all. He's not found his way back to where he was. Hey, look, they're still fantastic players, and I still believe that Andy Murray has it in him to win another Grand Slam, more Grand Slams plural. But, Azarenka will be looking at players like this, and she'll know it's a long way back.
Andy Murray, we also should mention, has had a bit of an off-court kerfuffle over the last week, of course, with the independence debate about Scotland and Great Britain, and Andy Murray making his thoughts known in the early hours of the morning on a tweet, which has caused a lot of reaction, I think we can certainly say, Catherine. But one thing I can certainly say, regardless of what anybody thinks about his view on the matter, is some of the reaction has been absolutely disgusting.
Without a shadow, I doubt you could find a right-thinking person anywhere that would disagree with you. I mean, it's been shocking. It's a great illustration of the dangers that being on Twitter opens you up to, I suppose. And you know, it's a very powerful tool, isn't it, Twitter? It's obviously shocking, absolutely shocking. But Andy Murray, rightly or wrongly, whatever you think about the opinion that he expressed, he might have some explaining to do when he next speaks to the British Tennis Press Corps. I think he's probably bracing himself for a fair barrage of questions just at the moment, isn't he?
Well, he's no stranger to situations like that. I'm sure he will do so when he gets given the opportunity. But he will certainly start his Asian swing now needing some points, because he's going to play three events pretty much back-to-back, Catherine. Where is he in the first week? I think he's in Tokyo, isn't he? And then he goes on to Beijing, and then he's in Shanghai. So lots of tennis to come for him, and that's because he's actually on the periphery, on the outskirts of the top eight players that will qualify for the World Tour Finals at the O2.
Yep, no points to defend from this portion of the season. So on paper, at least, it should be if he can put together some half decent tennis, and he does generally play well in this part of the year, provided he's healthy, if he can string it together, he should just scrape in to qualifying for the O2. But interestingly, at the US Open, he said, whether he was, it's just something he said to try and take the pressure off. He said, you know, getting his ranking up within that top eight by the end of the year and qualifying for the O2 wasn't a priority for him.
I don't believe it for a minute. I think it was heat of the moment reaction. I think he would probably have regretted that quite soon afterwards. And I think his actions are speaking louder than those words. He wants to qualify for that event.
Yeah, and I hope and think you're probably right. But you can't blame people. He said it. You can't blame people for writing about it and drawing conclusions, can you? But I think you're probably right. I think
you can't not report it. I think the truth is, though, with the type of personality he has, if somebody says to him, "Oh well, at least now you can concentrate on qualifying for the O2," his immediate response in the heat of the moment, when disappointed, is going to be, "Well, I'm not that bothered about that."
He's a contrarian, isn't he? He's
I would never be one of those.
It makes him an interesting, engaging.
No, it doesn't.
Bright character. I see what you did there, David.
Thanks.
Hilarious. Ba-dum-bum. But he's a contrarian. Yeah, he does like to express the contrary view to what's being put to him.
Yes. No. Yes. No. Yes. So, what else have we got to talk about? The tournament begins in Wuhan this week in Asia. I tell you what, they've got a heck of a field there. 17 of the top 18 players in the world are there. The only one who's not there, Li Na. Oh, Li Na, retired. Shame, isn't it?
Yeah, has there ever been such an outpouring of affection for a player upon their retirement? I mean, just so she did a press conference today in Beijing, which was broadcast throughout the world, I think. Obviously with translation for those that don't speak Mandarin. And just there are so many quotes pouring out of the press conference on Twitter about lovely little things she'd said about her time on tour and how she feels about tennis, how she's now going to retire close to her academy and focus on that. And she will be missed, won't she? She really will be missed.
Certainly will. And, you know, when you think back, if somebody had told you when she won the Australian Open that this woman will not be playing the sport this time next year, it would have been a big shock, wouldn't it?
Yeah, especially as, yeah, okay, she's 32, but that, Serena's blazed a trail here, hasn't she? That's not particularly old. That's not a barrier to winning Grand Slam titles on the women's tour. Nobody was really focusing on her age all that much and thinking, oh, you know, she might not be around that much longer. So obviously injury has had a hand in the decision. It's probably accelerated the decision somewhat, but I think certainly at the beginning of the year, I don't think anyone was prepared for this in the tennis world, were they? Obviously the length of time she was out, and I think was it Mary Carrillo at the US Open that stuck her neck on the line and predicted this would happen.
I love Mary Carrillo, brilliant broadcaster and brave, as you said.
Absolutely, and she's been proved right, and it's just a shame, isn't it?
But Li Na, I don't think she's going to have to worry about where her next meal's coming from, is she?
No, she. I can't put a figure on it. I imagine I can barely conceive of the number of squillions that she has in the bank, because she's very rightly been. She's been the most successful female athlete from China pretty much of all time, I think, certainly in such a mainstream global sport as tennis. She's done immense things for the popularity of tennis in China and the whole of Asia, I think, and she's a sponsor's dream come true. So I'm sure she could spend the rest of her life counting her yuan, but she won't be doing that. But yeah, she doesn't need to worry about money, and I don't begrudge her a single penny of it, because it's well earned.
Certainly is. Absolutely fantastic achievements throughout the course of her career, now 32 as well. So all the best to Li Na of China. And it does leave a heck of a hole there, doesn't it? Both in the draws in Asia over the next few weeks, even though it is a fantastic set of fields that they have. Another sad note I heard was that Ash Barty, the young Australian player, was taking a step away from the game, not retiring necessarily full time, but certainly having a break from the game. And it's sad to hear that, isn't it? Because she's a breath of fresh air in terms of the way she plays the game and her personality. But, you know, it's I think it is also a tricky sport for a young player to come to terms with the attention on them and what's expected of them, and doesn't work out for everybody.
And when I read that story, I thought, gosh, how old is she? And I thought, probably 20, 21. And then I saw she's 18. It's because she's been around that long. She's been talked about that long. You know, Australians are guilty in the same way that we are here of talking up players when they're very young, just as when they show the smallest signs of promise. Of course, she showed huge signs of promise. She won Junior Wimbledon, I think, at 15, and she won the Junior Australian Open title as well, similar to Laura Robson. She's been compared to sort of a Martina Hingis, but with more power, sort of slightly more modern version of Martina Hingis's game. She looked to have the complete package, but it's not as simple a mathematical sum as that. You know, there's other things to consider. She seems quite a bright, switched on girl, doesn't she? And I think just because you've got lots and lots of tennis ability doesn't mean that you're suited to the life of a tennis player. There's a lot more that goes with it than hitting balls. There's press conferences and practice sessions and gym sessions and being in hotel rooms on your own, ordering room service, and that's a very distinct way of life, and it's not for everyone. She's obviously made a decision that I've no doubt is right for her.
Absolutely, and let's hope she is able to come back to the sport when she's feeling much better about it all, and has a good future ahead of her. Well, the tennis world is exciting at the moment, Catherine. Lots of different winners, lots of established champions that we've been watching and enjoying for a long time now. We've got lots to look forward to and more predictions to get wrong. But I think that's about it for this week, isn't it?
Yep, don't make me predict anything just now. Can we have a prediction-free podcast just for one? I think although it might be that I just don't have any bad predictions left in me.
You do.
I've scraped the bottom of the barrel where bad.
No. There's loads more where that came from. but I hope you've enjoyed listening to this edition of the Tennis Podcast. We've enjoyed bringing it to you. We'll be back soon. I don't know when we can find some time, but hopefully quite soon. Speak to you then.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.